with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Hauck.
Okay, well, good evening, everyone, or good afternoon, wherever you are in the world at this time. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, having the courage to reclaim that which has always been in you. And this broadcast, as well as all the other broadcasts, focus on the integration of spirituality and mental health within the context of our relationships, the relationship with ourselves, the relationship that we have with others, and certainly the relationship that we have with God or the divine. It is my great pleasure to be with you here today and every Tuesday at 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. I'm Dr. James Hauck, and if you'd like more information about me or to leave me your comments about tonight's show, please visit www.reclaimingauthenticity.com. That's www.reclaimingauthenticity.com. And if you would like to be part of the show, please call in at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls in the second half of the show today. Well, how is your heart today? I hope that wherever you are today, you are safe and you are at peace. Well, just a quick word about next week's show, June 30th. Can you believe it already, the end of June? Well, that show is going to be entitled Looking for the Butter in Every Bowl of Milk. It's kind of a part two of today's show, but it's just an extension. So Looking for the Butter in Every Bowl of Milk. Well, welcome to summer. I hope everybody had a pleasant summer solstice as we said goodbye to spring and hello to summer, and wish every father out there a belated happy Father's Day. Hopefully that you were able to celebrate it and certainly remember perhaps fathers who are no longer with us, just remembering the kind of impact they've made in our lives, as well as finding the healing and the grace that's available to you. For those relationships that you had or may not have had with your father. Well, let's begin tonight's show, Finding the Extraordinary God in the Ordinary. And let's start off with a question, okay? How many of you out there have ever played peekaboo with a baby? Anybody? How many of you have ever played peekaboo? It seems like it's one of those games that just comes natural to us. It's funny, it's exciting, and to be quite honest, I think we adults get more joy out of playing that game than babies do because we love their expressions. We love seeing their little faces, you know, as they light up and as they jump with excitement and smile. Sometimes they laugh. Sometimes they giggle. Now, if you're ever playing peekaboo with the baby and they cry, well, you're either not doing it right or perhaps you got stinky breath and you need to go brush your teeth or grab the mouthwash or something and then come back and try it again. At any rate, it's loads of fun. In fact, I have to be quite honest, I've seen some of the most hard-hearted individuals sound very goofy and childlike when they play peekaboo with babies. It's just something about the imitation of like going goo, 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 or da, 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 or something like that, and just making funny gestures with our face that just really gets babies going. And again, to be quite honest, I'm also convinced that playing peekaboo is something we never outgrow. I don't care how old you get to be, you're just never going to outgrow it. But as we get older, as we grow out of, let's say, the infancy stages and we get into more of like the toddlerhood years, we play with that toy jack-in-the-box, you know, that square box with the little crank and the music. And then after a while, then the monkey will jump up or the clown will pop up. And we laugh, but we also quickly learn when to anticipate the monkey or the clown to pop up at just the right time. You know, initially it scares us, but after a while we get used to it. than we expected. But we still have lots and lots of fun. Well, actually, I don't know if you've ever considered this or not, but whenever we are playing peekaboo with babies or jack-in-the-box with toddlers, we're also teaching them something developmental psychologist Jean Piaget called object permanence. Object permanence is something which taught children that although they can no longer see or hear or touch an object, it still exists. It didn't go anywhere, even though we can't see it at the time. Now, back in his day, Piaget was commissioned by the French government to study the differences in cognitive development in children versus adults. And he concluded that we go through developmental stages in the brain, you know, cognitively, from understanding basic concrete memory skills to more abstract mental gymnastics as we grow. Therefore, playing peekaboo helps children form these mental images of objects, such as remembering where their favorite toy is when it's under a blanket or perhaps in a toy box. It also, as we play peekaboo with babies, it teaches them that we're still here, even though they can't see our faces in the moment, and we play right into it. Where did I go? Can you see me? I don't know. Where did I go? Where am I? Here I am. Well, ironically, we never outgrow object permanence as we get older either. You see, what begins in infancy becomes more and more abstract the older we get, such as holding on to that mental image of, let's say, a loved one, even after their death. In order to do this, we have to form this context, as it were, to remember the person and how they lived, or remember their voices, or to recall their laugh, or what they did for a living, and so forth. But do you ever feel as though at times that God hides from us and we ask, where did you go? We might feel as though God's playing peekaboo with us and we don't know where God is. You know, whether it be in times of distress and we say, where are you? I've been calling out to you and I hear nothing. I've been looking for you and I see nothing. Or maybe it's during the good times when we have our hearts are filled with gratitude and we just say, I have to trust that you are there because I don't see you in the moment. I don't hear your voice, but still, I know I have a relationship with you. Well, let's also take this concept of object permanence deeper into our relationships with one another. You know, I raised a question just a couple of seconds ago. Does God play peekaboo with us? You know, maybe not in a malicious way to hide from us. And, you know, at some point God jumps out and just scares us and says, here I am. But maybe perhaps in a modified version as a means for us to learn that perhaps in order to see or hear or even touch God, we need to see and hear and feel with our hearts and our souls. Wasn't it Jesus who once said that the pure in heart shall see God? How do we get to that purity? How do we trust in the fact that God will always be there? See, if we're honest with each other, most of the time we want God to be someone or something else for us, instead of allowing God to be who God is, and realizing that it is we who need to be transformed in order to see and hear and touch God more clearly than before. But also, have you ever noticed that when we start looking for God, God shows up in the most unlikely places and in and through the most unlikely people? Have you ever noticed that? God often shows up in the most unlikely places and in and through the most unlikely people. I think the first time I really learned this lesson was when I was having lunch with my college classmates. We were talking, we were just catching up with each other, but somehow the subject changed and became about, how do you listen to God in prayer? Do you listen to God in prayer? How do we do this? when do we do this, and so forth. Well, when it was my turn to share my experiences in the group, a student from Africa, I'll never forget, a student from Africa held up his hand and stopped me in the middle of my sentence and told me I was doing it all wrong. And you know what? I got offended. What do you mean I'm doing it all wrong? I've been talking to God all my life. And it was also at this point where he again held up his hand and he replied, "That's just it. You do all the talking. You never take time to listen to God." Well, you know what? He was right. I didn't like it, but he was right. I did do all the talking. That was a harsh reality I had to come face to face with. Why was that? Why did I feel like I needed to do all the talking to God, as if God needed to make sure he heard everything I was saying? But you know, in that simple conversation over lunch, it seemed like from that moment on, my whole awareness shifted. See, I went from, instead of praying with my head, you know, from my thoughts and from my logic, I now started to pray from my heart, and ultimately, from that soul connection I have with God. And ironically, I started to see and to hear all the layers of woundedness in me. Again, not in a malicious way that God brought to my intention, but instead being shown all the things that needed to be healed. Those psychological, those emotional, and those spiritual wounds. Wounds that clouded my sight and sound of seeing and hearing the Spirit of God more clearly in my relationships and in myself. I remember watching an interview that Mother Teresa did long, long time ago. This is years and years ago. And the interviewer asked her, you know, just simply out of curiosity, "When you pray to God, what do you say?" To which she didn't miss a beat. She just quickly replied, "Nothing. I listen." Well, then, what does God say to you? "Nothing," she said. "God listens." And what a difference listening to God makes. Because whenever I prayed with my heart and soul, and whenever I pray now with my heart and my soul, I quickly discover that God does the same thing with me. You see, it's being in tune with God on a soul level in which we discover that words are not needed. In fact, you might say there are times when our words get in the way. And this is true in our relationships with each other. I've been to India 4 times in my life, and each time I learned something new about myself, I learned something new about others, and especially I learned something new about where and when God shows up. Again, in the most unlikely places and through the most unlikely people. Now, I only know a few simple words and phrases of Hindi, but it was connecting to others on that soul level that allowed me to truly communicate from a place of authenticity. From simple gestures of folded hands and a gentle bow and greeting with each other by saying namaste, to being given a cup of tea from an elderly woman who wore her hardened life on her hands and in her face. A heart-to-heart, soul-to-soul connection is certainly where God shows up. And this was clearly the lesson I learned this last trip to India back in December of 2019, before 2020 came on the stage. And like I said, this being my 4th trip, I wanted to do more intentional soul-related experiences that I have not done so much earlier. And little did I know that when I put that out there, God heard that prayer. The universe responded by saying, "Okay, you want to see more of me? Then I need you to stop, be quiet, and pay attention to the ordinariness around you." Now, I'm a pretty big guy, and it's hard for me not to stand out in a crowd, so going through India unnoticed was not going to happen. People would certainly look and wonder, what in the world is this big dude doing here? But my trip became more about a random person's desire to be a blessing to me. That taught me to not only be more intent in looking for God in the ordinary acts of kindness, but also, this is exactly where the extraordinariness of God is. This was something that my teacher back in Loyola, Bob Wicks, taught me about tangible holiness. He would say, what makes ordinary days extraordinary is all due to the tangible holiness God works in and through human relationships. What makes ordinary days extraordinary is all due to the tangible holiness God works in and through human relationships. And this is what I find in younger generations. Theirs is a relationship that has to be felt. Theirs is a relationship that they have to be able to put these abstract concepts, abstract ideas into their hands. They have to be able to hold it. They have to be able to touch it. They have to be able to see it. They have to be able to feel it. They have to be able to hear it. And out of that comes this extraordinary awareness for them of who God is and where God is in their life. Well, as I said, this last trip to India was something rather unique, of course. I did lots of things and went to very specific places that I had planned out. Little did I know that it felt like as soon as I stepped off the plane that God said, okay, you're now on my time. You are now going to follow my agenda. And so I did. And one of the places that I visited was in Cochinchina in the Himalayas, Babaji's cave, if you've ever heard of it. And climbing up this mountain, we're already a couple miles up in the Himalayas, and to climb a little bit further to reach this cave of just this wonderful Maha Avatar, Babaji. And when I came down from the mountain, an old woman who lived there with her son and daughter in a very humble dwelling. She gave me a cup of tea and gestured for me to sit down. Now, I don't know if maybe she thought I was going to fall down, but anyway, she said, here, sit down. And so I did. And again, just the view was breathtaking, being on the side of the mountain. But at any rate, the kindness in her eyes as she handed me my tea really touched my soul. We didn't speak one word of Hindi together except namaste. At another time during my stay in India this last time, I visited Vatsalya Gram Ashram in Vrindavan. And they were offering free cataract surgeries for the people in the town. They do this several times throughout the year. And at that time, they performed over 300 surgeries in a few days. And as I walked around the ashram, I saw families living in tents and makeshift shelters, all to be close to their loved ones who were having surgery that week. Families and children would kind of wave to me and invite me to come on over and sit with them and have tea or share a simple snack, all filled with smiles and gratitude to share what they had with a stranger. And of course, all smiles when I got out my camera, my phone, and wanted to take pictures. And all I had to say was, photo, photo, photo. And the children gathered around. They loved it. We had a ball. We had a ball. I wasn't sure who was blessed looking back on those times, you know, the most, me or them. But although we didn't speak each other's language, we did share, again, that soul-to-soul connection. Well, I also visited with the children who lived at Vatsalya Gram, those who lived there most of the time. And knowing that kids love music in general, I took my Native American flute with me, and I played for them. And I visited with them for about an hour each day or so in the afternoon after their studies were complete. I would play, and they would return a blessing by singing for me. And this happened twice because, you know, first time I sat with the little guys and girls, the ages 7 or 5 through 7 years old, and I play with them. And of course, they were all wide eyed and smiles. And then, you know, one of their teachers asked if they could sing a song for me. And certainly they did. And it was just a wonderful blessing as they sat there, you know, with folded hands and closed eyes and just started to sing. And I met also with the teenagers, and I played for them, and we had fun, you know, just hanging out and so forth. But then a couple of them wanted to sing songs for me. In fact, there was this one girl, she was probably about 13 or 14 years old, beautiful, beautiful voice, just sang a traditional Hindi song just in honor of the time that I spent with the kids. And again, I don't know who was blessed more, me or them. But it didn't matter because what we shared with each other was from our souls. Well, on another day, I also visited the house where mentally challenged kids lived. Again, as I played, their eyes widened and their toothy smiles were visible. And at one point, as I was playing, a young boy of about 8 or 9 years old, he was laying on his bed with his back to me. And he was born without sight. And as I was playing, he started to sing. And the grandmothers, the mothers, and the aunts, who are the caretakers of the children, they were all astonished. I just looked around, and they were wide-eyed, and their mouths were just dropped open, like, what? We've never heard this before. And it wasn't until later, you know, through an interpreter, I was told that this boy, who was born blind, had never sang before. Everyday examples of where God shows up. Giving a cup of cold water or tea. When you have done it to the least of these, you've done it unto me. And when we are able to do this, no matter who we do that with, makes all of heaven start to stand up and cheer. And you know, when you really stop to think about it, God isn't asking us to do anything difficult than what we can already do. Visiting the sick or visiting somebody in prison or giving water or feeding them a meal or giving them something to wear and so forth, these are all things that we are capable of doing. But you know, what makes these ordinary acts of kindness transformational is that God shows up and then it becomes extraordinary. Grace-filled moments, teachable moments, life-changing moments. As we care for one another in the physical sense, we also care for one another in the spiritual sense. But don't we often make it harder or more complicated than what it needs to be? In a way, what God is saying to us is, you do what you can do. I'll take care of the rest. And if we ever want to see the extraordinary grace of God, pay attention to the ordinary. Again, I would love to hear your heart on this subject and how you've been touched by the ordinariness of others and the extraordinariness of God. So I invite you to call in and let's chat about this. 888-627-6008. And I'll be back in 1 minute. Okay, welcome back. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, Integrating Spirituality and Mental Health, and I'm your host, Dr. James Houck. Well, earlier in the show, we've been talking about seeing the extraordinariness of God in the ordinary, tangible holiness, as it were, as we pay attention to how, when, where, and in whom God shows up in our lives. We do have Ben and Marie on the line. So, Ben and Marie, good afternoon or good evening, wherever you are in the world. How are you doing today?
Doing all right, Jim.
Hey, Jim.
Hey.
We are in Glassboro, New Jersey.
Yes. What is new and exciting in the heart of New Jersey?
Well, not really a lot. Been sitting here listening to the things that you've been talking about, and there are a couple of things that really kind of hit me, and I figured I had to jump on and give you a call.
Oh, okay. Well, I appreciate the call. What's coming up for you?
Well, you had mentioned at one point Jesus talking about purity of heart, and I found a direct correlation kind of to his statement to the apostles when the children were starting to crowd around him, and they were all kind of giving him grief about it, you know, wanting to shoo the kids away. And he said something about, yeah, suffer the little children to come unto me. Sort of seems that there's an allegory there about what even carries further over into Beautiful Painted Arrows teachings on the medicine wheel about childlike innocence and teachability.
Right.
Before we enter that place of vision. And so I sort of see that kind of strung through everything you've been talking about tonight, the idea of approaching God not in a, oh, I know what I'm doing kind of way, but in a, I have no idea what I'm doing, you know.
And, right, yeah.
Saying to God, you take yours and leave me what's mine. I just don't know the difference, so I'm going to let you make the first move. You take what's yours, I'll be open, you speak to me, and then that way I know what I'm called to do.
Right. Yeah, and I can certainly relate to that. Like, you know, going over to India this last time, it was just like, okay, it's almost as if God's saying, you know, look, just get over there and I'll take care of the rest. You know, just, you know, get your feet on the ground over there. And even though I had a loose agenda of where I wanted to go and what I wanted to see and visit some old friends and so forth, it was like, you know, about halfway through the trip, you know, God saying, like, stop. Pay attention to the people who've been coming in and out of your life, even the ones who simply are giving you a meal or that tea or something. And I really started to see where God showed up, and it's like, you don't need to look hard for me. I'm always there. But look for me in the right places and with the language of the soul. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, when I made the decision a few years ago to move my mom into hospice, one of their counselors came to talk to me, and she was an elderly nun who things always have a way of working out, and this was a woman who during the course of her life had been extremely politically active. She was probably in her 80s. She'd been arrested at protest. She was there on the White House lawn when Vietnam vets were throwing their medals over the wall and just all kinds of, you know, very socially active protesting. Mm-hmm. And I came away from that discussion, you know, kind of wishing I had done more. At that point in my life, I was still kind of looking outward. You know, and here we are all these years later. It's probably been, oh, gosh, 12 years later, I'm looking at everything that's going on in the world today, and I'm seeing kids on the front line. I'm seeing, you know, a lot of older folks acting as mentors or stepping out of the way and just cheering the kids on as they're changing the world. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's very clear that we all do serve in different ways. We were kind of talking about it the other day, you know, sometimes you go into the world with a blowtorch and a megaphone and your job is to rile people. and, and, And other times, all you can do is cup your hand around the candle that you're carrying and keep the light from going out, whatever
right.
that means, you know. Sometimes it's just saying hello to your neighbor. Sometimes it's holding the door open for somebody. I mean, it doesn't sound like a lot, but you may be their only human contact that day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and like I said, it's just, where do we, I mean, why do we think we have to make it more complicated than what it is? You know, it's the very simple things. You know, again, Jesus laid it out clearly. I think it's the fifth chapter. No, I'm sorry. It was the parable of the sheep and the goats, where he says, look, you know, you give a cup of cold water, you visit the sick. And these are all things that you can do. You know, visit me when I'm in prison and things like that. And yeah, it doesn't take any extra effort on our part. It's what we can do. But those moments, it's not just showing up, excuse me, not just showing up and sitting with somebody who's sick or visiting somebody and is in prison. It's what happens when we sit with them or when we visit them in prison or when we share that cup of cold water or, in my case, you know, a cup of tea. It's that beautiful moment that, you know, the extraordinariness of God comes out in human relationships in ways that you know, everybody in that moment come away transformed.
I think what kind of brought it home to me was at one time listening to a teacher that we really, really like named Stephen Jenkinson, and he was talking about the parable of the widow with the penny, the two pennies, and the idea that, you know, into the door of the house of worship come all these wealthy people, and they're flaunting their giving. You know, they're coming in their finest clothes, and they're, you know, making these big grandiose gestures, and they're doing their giving in a very expressive and obvious way. And then in the door comes this, you know, widow with two pennies and wearing rags, and they're looking down on her. And, you know, Jesus basically says to them, well, you gave out of wealth, and she gave out of poverty, you know, so she gave all.
Right.
And you could afford to give what you give, but, you know, basically she's not going to eat today is the gist of it, you know.
Right.
And
right.
So you know, I've worked with so many people who say, well, this is all I can do, and I have to stop them, and I say, no, it's all you can do. Like, it's your emphasis on that word.
Oh, yeah.
That really affects your attitude, because If it is honestly all you can do, then you're serving at your fullest potential.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
and perhaps someone else who says, well, you know, I'm out the door on vacation for the next month, but before I go, I'm going to stop off at Goodwill and dump off a bag of clothes that I need to get rid of so I can open up room in my closet. You know, like, again, not to short the effort, but where is it coming from?
Right, right.
You know.
Yeah, and again, I mean, I see this a lot in mental health and working with clients, and I'm sure you see it too, where some people get to the point where they look at all their problems and what they can't do or what they're not capable of doing, and, you know, just reminding them that you are so gifted beyond what you can possibly imagine, and to not to wait till you have your act together. Or not to wait till you have everything, you know, under control and have enough money in the bank or whatever your standard is, but to do now with what you have. You know, it's really a lesson in stewardship. You know, what are we doing with what's been entrusted to us? Because we certainly came into this world with nothing. And again, I don't know about you, but I've never seen a U-Haul, you know, being pulled by a hearse. It's just we cannot take it with us. So it's what do we do with what we have been entrusted with up until the time when we're done on this earth, so to speak.
That's right. You know, if yeah. people say, well, it's my gift, right? Well, a gift is something that you give away. A present is something that's yours to keep, but a gift is something that you give away. So if it is your gift, in fact, you're just carrying it for someone else, for them to open it. And so who are you to keep that from the world?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, but again, you know, the pull of, you know, or I should say the tug of the world to, you know, remind people that you have to have it all together before you can step outside your door and be effective. I just don't buy that, because we are so gifted in so many ways, and there's so much more giftedness in us that we have yet to discover. It's just being in the right place at the right time, and just being aware of how God can show up in the simplest things, just the very simple gestures that don't really cost anything but maybe our time.
And I think you're right about the idea of not having to have it all together before you take it on the road, because sometimes it's our brokenness that shows other people that, you know, we're capable of being functional in the midst of our own brokenness, and they sometimes look to that and say, you know, if you can do that, then I can get out of bed in the morning. I can feed myself. I can take a shower. You know, I can go to work another day. And I can, at the very least, I can do that. And they sometimes fail to realize the power that's in that, because that's a sign the healing's already beginning to percolate within them. And they learn that from just by observing us in the midst of our own brokenness going on with our day.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have, you know, a handful of clients who are just like, well, doc, you ought to be grateful I just showed up today. And it's like, I am. you have no idea how grateful I am. You know, so, you know, thank you for putting in the effort. And, you know, of course, we got to bring that back around and say, well, let's talk about that. And, you know, what are some things coming up in your life this past week that wanted to keep you in bed? You know, that you just wanted to pull the covers over your head and just say, not today. Yeah. Yeah. Excellent. All right.
Well, it's been great talking to you, brother. I'll get off and give somebody else a chance, but I love what you're doing, and thanks for taking this out to the people.
All righty. You are welcome. All right. Take care, you too.
Take care.
Thanks, Jim.
Bye-bye.
Yep. Bye-bye. Okay. Well, wonderful caller, good friends of mine. I have to share with everybody. Let's see. For those of you who are thinking about calling in, please call in. I would just love to hear from you where and how God showed up in just the simple things in your life, the simple ways, the extraordinariness that in the moment, on a surface level, was just kind of ordinary and just, you know, it just seemed to happen. But the extraordinariness of God stepped in, and it made it so, so transformative. But while we're waiting for the next call, just want to share with you a little bit more up on this subject. I was reading in the book Making All Things New, by the author Henry Nouwen. He's a Catholic priest, a professor, and of course, author of many, many books. And one quote of his just really jumped out at me, and just it's priceless, because it just really ties all this what we've been talking about into our relationships. And he writes, "We can take a lot of physical and even mental pain when we know that it truly makes us part of the life we live together in the world." I'll say that again. We can take a lot of physical and even mental pain when we know that it truly makes us part of the life we live together in the world. And as I said, you know, just earlier, a short time ago, this is something I see clearly in people who struggle with mental health issues. You know, it just, in addition to wanting to get help for their issues, or just simply working through their losses or their pain, or just wanting to feel better at times, whatever comes up in the moment for them, they often feel like they have to wait until they have their act together, or at least they have to wait until they have healed themselves in order to feel as though they can make a difference in the life of somebody else. And that's just simply not accurate. Because when you think about our own lives, we hold the tension of, let's say, sickness and health together. We hold the tension of life and death together. We hold the tension of having plenty and having nothing together, being fed or going hungry. We hold that together, being thirsty or given something to drink. We hold that together. It's just a part of a tension of life that we have. So we don't have to wait until we are full or when we no longer thirst or when we have, as I said, enough money in the bank or whatever our standard is to tell ourselves, okay, now I can go and do. Or I've heard more people say, oh, I'm going to wait till I retire. Okay, then what? Hopefully you get to retirement. Some do, many do, but some don't. Instead of waiting, again, a nice hard question to ask ourselves is, like, what are we waiting for? I mean, when we see a need today, we should be able to act. But still, many people feel as though they have nothing to offer because all they see in themselves is this darkness and shame and misery. But again, this is not the case. I mean, if everybody waited until they had their act together before they helped anybody, nothing would get done. Nobody would be helped. Nobody would be fed. Nobody would be clothed. Nobody would be visited, so on and so forth. The simplest, most life-changing moments occur when we're not concerned about whether or not we've spent enough money on a gift or whether or not what we do will be seen by others. Now, what makes a difference in the life of another person all depends on what is given from the heart and the soul. We're all gifted and graced for the purpose of one another. And to be quite honest, it really doesn't take a lot of effort on our part to see and hear the pain of others. And quite simply, we don't have to look no further sometimes than within our own families or within our own communities to be reminded of that pain and misery and suffering. It just runs so, so deep. But pain and grief and misery and suffering is something we all have in common. Everybody experiences it at one time or another, sooner or later, regardless of race or creed or color or language barriers or social distancing these days. But we also have in common our strength, our humanity, our love, our perseverance, our grace. We hold both of these in this shared humanity. Just like a cup can hold something hot like coffee or something cold like iced tea, when it's shared with another person at just the right time, even on the mountainside of the Himalayas, it could just be the difference that a person needs to be reminded that they are not alone in this world. I once read a story about a youth group who held various fundraisers in their community to raise money to visit other church community in Central America. And it took them almost a year of raising money and raising enough money for all 10 of them, plus their youth group leader, to go on this trip. And about a month before they were getting ready to leave, the leader could not get in touch with the community in which they were going to stay. It seemed like all forms of communication had stopped. Well, instead of postponing the trip that these kids had worked so hard for to raise all this money and they got their hopes up, you know, they decided that they were still going to go, regardless of, you know, what they find down there. They just had to go on faith, as it were. Well, when the group finally arrived at the village, they really couldn't believe their eyes. The whole town was devastated by an earthquake that had occurred about a month ago. And ironically, the only building left somewhat standing was the church. And it was just so happened to be a Sunday morning, and the youth group heard a bunch of singing and, you know, commotion coming from the church. And so they decided to investigate. And so they went over to the church and they opened the doors. And as soon as they got in through the doors, the whole congregation stopped. It was almost as if they couldn't believe what they were seeing. Everybody in the church turned around. Everybody looked astonished. And there was silence. They just stood there looking at each other. And the pastor, who was up front, just slowly made his way down to this, you know, group of teenagers. And, you know, he said to them, very astonished look, "¿Qué pasa?" Which roughly translates, "What in the world are you kids doing in a place like this?" And they shared back and forth why they were there. And the pastor shared with the group that they had experienced a tremendous earthquake about a month or so before. And they had completely forgotten that this group was on their way down. They completely forgotten what this group was going to do when they got there. And then the pastor said, "You know what? We prayed for a long time that God would send somebody to us to help us, whatever that need they could provide would be." And after the pastor got done sharing this story, one kid in the youth group got this big smile on his face, and he turned to his friend and he just exclaimed nice and loud, "Gee, I never thought we'd be an answer to prayer." Well, that's true. How many times do we think that there's just no way we could be an answer to somebody's prayer because we don't consider ourselves answers to prayer? We never know what's going on in the life of somebody until we show up, or perhaps until we ask, or perhaps we do something kind. And in that little moment, in that little glimpse, God shows up. And this wonderful transformation takes place, in which people, once they part ways, once they go back to wherever they're going or go on with their day, they know they're never going to be the same. It was a grace-filled moment in the middle of two people meeting through a simple act of kindness. This is where God shows up. This is where the extraordinariness of God is. This is where we can find God. We need to pay attention to the ordinariness of life, to have that awareness that simply going through our day just may not be another simple day. Something extraordinary just might happen. Something as simple as Ben and Marie mentioned of just smiling to the person. You just never know if that's going to be the only kindness that they have been shown that day or not. Or a kind word. Or to give them something that they need, whether it be food or something, whatever the need is. It might just be that answer to prayer. It just might restore in them, let's say, faith in humanity. Just being reminded of, "I thought nobody cared." But it often takes so little time, so little effort to be able to do these things. And we have to wonder at times, have we done enough? Have we ever done just what needs to be done in the right moment? And one of the things that I was reminded of as Ben and Marie were talking about, am I sure that I've done enough? Is there something more I can do? I'm sure if you've seen the movie Schindler's List, you remember that memorable scene at the end after World War II is over, you know, in Europe, and the Germans had surrendered, or should say the Nazis had surrendered, and now all the Jewish people were free. And Oskar Schindler, being a member of the Nazi party, he was then being hunted. And it was time for him that he and his wife had to leave. And so it was about midnight or so, and they're all gathered outside before he gets in his car to leave. And he's going through last-minute instructions with his secretary, and he looks around at all the people. And his secretary stops him and hands him this ring that, you know, has this inscription from the Talmud that whoever saves one life saves the world in time. There's a powerful statement to chew on for the rest of your life. Whoever saves one life saves the world in time. But the people, the workers, also signed a letter, and they tried to explain, you know, as best they could, just in case he was captured and he needed to explain what he was doing. And the memorable scene comes where Oscar Schindler looks around and he starts to tear up. And he looks at all the faces and he asks this question, you know, could I have done more? I should have done more. I could have done so much more. And he almost has this, you know, emotional breakdown because he just feels the weight of, you know, the cost of human lives of the war and the many people that through his bargaining and everything else that he was doing saved a lot of people and, you know, from the gas chambers and brought them over to his factory to work. And he kept asking, should I have done more? Could I have done more? If I would have sold this, I could have got 10 people. If I would have sold that, I would have at least got one, maybe two more people. And you started to really see and feel the impact of just the price of a human life. Maybe not in materialistic sense, but just the cost in general of what it means to truly value humanity. Have we done enough when there's so much more to do? This is a question which we need to answer with ourselves, to ourselves. Yeah, there's always more that we can be doing, but what have we been doing with what we've been entrusted with? Recognizing the giftedness in us and the graces and so forth and the skills and the knowledge and everything that has been given us, how are we using those things to be a blessing to somebody else? We truly do not have to wait until we get our act together. We can act now. Blessings occur each and every day, the right moment at just the right time with two ordinary people. So thank you for joining me tonight. I've enjoyed this. Please keep looking for those opportunities to be a blessing to others and keep on looking for the extraordinariness of God in the most ordinary circumstances. I'm Dr. James Houck, and have a good night.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding to buy a book by Dr. Houck, it's all there. Just wander on over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Tuesday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time on BBS Radio.